ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
Kevin Durant didn't show up at all, only attempted 11 shots. He was pretty much non-existent for most of the game offensively. Kyrie Irving didn't have it again. For the second game in a row, they looked lethargic. They looked completely outclassed. They looked thoroughly outcoached from top to bottom. When you look at this game right here, it was the absence of anything that you would have expected from a team with two dynamic superstars like the Brooklyn Nets. They are down 0-3, and it's about the brooms at this particular moment in time.
You know, a sweep is actually a pretty gentle euphemism for what Jason Tatum and the Boston Celtics are actually doing to the Brooklyn Nets in the first round of these NBA playoffs. And it also feels like a broom is not going to be nearly enough to clean up whatever gets left behind. So today, with Game 4 tonight, we call in our Nets correspondent, Nick Friedel, who has been asking Brooklyn superstars the tough, necessarily uncomfortable questions all year long. And he explains why a lot more than just this season is on the line. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, April 25th. This is ESPN Daily. Nick Friedel, there is a ridiculous amount of good basketball right now. It is like the peak of just NBA nerd, NBA consumer overdosing. And the reason I want to talk to you specifically is because I'm seeing things in the series you're covering, Nick, the Celtics-Nets series, that I did not think could happen. Things that sort of speak to big picture philosophies being tested and also these insane individual melodramas. And you're there, like you're watching this up close in person. You're asking questions in these press conferences, which are occasionally just unbelievable theater. So how would you describe, having seen all of this so up close, what the Celtics are doing to the Nets right now?
They're making Kevin Durant look human. And we have not seen that happen maybe ever, Pablo, this.
No.
And that, to me, having watched Kevin through the years and having covered him now for several years, dating back to the end of his time with the Warriors, to see a team defensively make Kevin look like just a regular player and not the unbelievable superstar that he is, for my money, the best player in the game, to see that happen on top of every other melodrama in this series, that has been fascinating because we're just not used to seeing any team be able to put their will on that player.
I mean, Nick, they're putting him in the trunk of a car and closing it shut and driving around with him back there, just like muffled screaming. It's ridiculous. No, it feels like he is helpless, Nick, in ways that I found unimaginable. Because look, we know in the modern NBA, right, there is the axiom that great offense will always beat great defense. Kevin Durant arguably is the greatest scorer we have ever seen. And what the Celtics are doing in terms of defensive execution, explain how this is working, because it's as impressive a defense that I can remember seeing again in the modern era of the game.
Pablo, what makes Kevin so great is that he's 7 feet tall and he can hit from anywhere on the floor. So you can, in theory, before this series, you can put the greatest defense around Kevin and he could dribble down and he could still pull up over three people and swish it. And you're like, yep, that's Kevin Durant. Kevin is Kevin Durant for a reason, as Steve Nash said about a week ago. Well, that narrative has shifted, because what the Celtics are doing is they are putting every body they can at Kevin. They made it very clear, and Ime Udoka, the Celtics coach, and his staff deserve an immense amount of credit, because their defensive game plan has been executed against Kevin to perfection. They are not going to let him beat them. Somebody else is going to have to do it. Kyrie almost did it in game one. Kyrie has no-showed in games two and three. Not a coincidence that the Nets have disappeared now and the series is about over. But everywhere Kevin goes on the floor, there are eyes that trace him. every Celtic knows where Kevin Durant is. Every time that he's trying to get positioning down on the blocks, he's getting an elbow. He is feeling somebody everywhere he goes. And I cannot remember a time where he has looked so frustrated out there because he's realizing that not only does he not have enough help around him, but individually, he can't do what he needs to do. And I asked him after game three, what is the difference? Because he's been a focal point of every defensive game plan.
Of course. Stopping Kevin Durant has been everybody's mission for years and years now, but the Celtics are doing it in a way that is clearly getting to him.
100%. And I said, what is it? And he said, they are just bigger than us.
What is it about this defense that is different?
I just think they got more size than us, you know? Marcus Smart, the smallest guy in that lineup, and he's 6'4".
Defensive player of the year, by the way, now, Marcus Smart, yes.
Defensive player of the year. And everywhere he goes, he is feeling somebody. Like, as I'm watching the end of game three, all kinds of craziness happens in my brain watching the Nets, Pablo. But I'm hearing Burgess Meredith as Mickey and Rocky going, to the ribs, to the ribs. And it just feels like they are crushing Kevin and the Nets inside over and over and over again. And that is what has occurred. Because if you can make Kevin Durant look human, forget the Nets. This is when you start to wonder, if you're watching the Celtics, if this is a legit title team and they can continue winning in the playoffs.
And now I'm imagining Jason Tatum, whose name we have to mention here, because not only is he averaging 30 a game in this series, but he is one of these wings of death, you know, that has been sort of smothering Kevin Durant. I'm imagining Jason Tatum, to borrow another quote from Rocky, just be like, if he dies, he dies. it feels that way. It feels like Jason Tatum is coming for what Kevin Durant has had, right? The crown atop his head, the idea of like, oh, you think you're the best 7-foot-ish wing scorer who can do everything? No, that's me now. I'm going to block your jump shot. Nick, I have not seen Kevin Durant's jumper get blocked this many times in a span of a week as I mean, in the span of his career. Like, I just don't remember it happening.
Pablo, the amount of pride I think the Celtics have taken in this series by doing what they're doing to Kevin. Forget just winning, because winning is the end-all, be-all. It always will be. But this is, if you come at the king, you best not miss. The Celtics are not missing.
No.
They have headshots, done everything.
A series of snipered headshots. And it does feel, Nick, it feels like someone knows the buttons in the video game and the other person doesn't. And that's insane to think about, right? But the Celtics know exactly what they're doing. The Celtics are inviting the Nets, it feels like, to do exactly what the Nets like to do. And the Celtics are just, they're curb stomping a man. This is getting very graphic, but I don't know how else to describe a Kevin Durant who only had 16 points on 11 shot attempts, only 2 free throws. And this was after he was scoreless in the second half of game 2, right? I mean, Kevin Durant in game 3, Nick, did not have an attempt from the field in the last 11 minutes of a game that was winnable. And it seems like this is now both physical, as KD told you, but also mental.
Pablo, he said after game 3 that he's overthinking.
Probably should have took more shots, but I just tried to play the game the right way without being too aggressive or forcing turnovers. I didn't want to get no live ball ones, just playing one-on-one out at the top. I was just thinking too much, to be honest, this whole series, like how I'm going to approach the game, you know what I'm saying? So
to hear Kevin Durant have that type of admission makes you just shake your head at the brilliance of what Boston has done. And to your point about the button pushing, it's spot on. Who's pushing the buttons? Ime Udoka, who was an assistant coach for the Brooklyn Nets last year and watched all of this up close. Ime Udoka. So for all the praise, deservedly so, that Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart and all those guys.
Al Horford, throw him in there too, right?
Pablo, we're on the Rocky comparisons. Al Horford took Bruce Brown's quotes before this series, where Bruce Brown said, they don't have Robert Williams. We could attack the hell out of them down low. Al Horford and Daniel Tice, we got them. Al Horford looks like he taped those quotes to the mirror and has just watched.
It looks like he's been training by punching like dead cows. He's like boxing meat. I mean, an honest question I have, as the Celtics defense just keeps switching and throwing like giant bodies at these guys, and you mentioned the Ime Udoka advantage here schematically as a coach. I mean, this is a layman's question, a casual perhaps question that I have watching this game, but I want to ask you too. Do the Nets run plays on offense in the half court, Nick? Like, describe what you see. And you're laughing at this question, but I think you're laughing because there is a part of you that also wonders this.
As usual, my friend, you know me pretty well at this point. That's exactly what I'm wondering. And that's the talk is, as we're watching, all the writers are watching these games. It's just Kevin ISO, Kyrie ISO. Does Kyrie want to pass? It's like a flowchart. Okay, is Kevin open? No. All right, I'm not going to pass. I'm going to take a shot. All right.
It's a ridiculously simple flowchart. And it usually ends, all the arrows point to like long two, just like a super inefficient 20-foot jumper. It's just like, what? Steve Nash, man, look, I understand. We can get into the complications, the palace intrigue around Steve Nash in a bit here, like what happens to him. But it feels like Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are driving the car and they're just driving it into a ditch. What I don't know is whether Steve Nash is trying to get them to do other stuff or if this is just how this has been all year.
What I would tell you, having watched them day in, day out the last few months, is this is exactly what it's looked like all along. The Celtics are exposing all the flaws that everybody around the league always saw from the Nets. These are all the same things that were there. And as far as Nash goes, so many people are saying, what are the adjustments? What are the adjustments? And I tell you that I don't think Nash is putting on a coaching clinic, because every time I look down, I feel like I'm watching Ted Lasso. He's just down there clapping, clapping, clapping. Hey, it's okay, guys. Clap, 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 clap. But at the same time, if you're going to crush Nash, I think you have to crush Sean Marks in the front office as well, because this is just a flawed roster, and this was the way in which it was built, and the guy they're truly missing, although I never would have given him an extension because he has clearly gone downhill a little bit, but the guy they need right now is James Harden.
Yes,
is that safety valve offensively who can create a little more and take some pressure off of Kevin and Kyrie, and he's not there and they don't have enough to back it up.
Yeah, I mean, look, the turnover numbers are jarring, right? Because even the way that game ended, game three, Kevin Durant kind of just like lackadaisically like chucks the ball, gets intercepted. It's the defense of the Boston Celtics, right? They forced 21 turnovers on Saturday night in game three. They scored 37 points off of those turnovers. Kevin Durant this series has 19 made field goals, 17 turnovers now through three games. And I guess the question, because I want to be as fair as I can to try to understand, like, how is Kevin Durant this bad so suddenly? This is sort of the thing where it's like, if I'm a Celtics fan, I'm furious whenever this question gets asked. But it's also weirdly a great compliment to the Celtics. Kevin Durant's playing like he's hurt. What has he said about, like, just his body? Because it looks not right.
It doesn't look right. And when you watch him, it does seem like there is a hitch somewhere, because he is usually so graceful, and he can get up and down any way he wants. Pablo, all he has told us repeatedly is that his wind is good, his body is feeling fine. It's not something physical. History tells you that any player who's playing 40-plus minutes a night, every night, and for the most part since he came back in early March from that MCL sprain, that's what he's been doing, it catches up with you. So I'm sure, like it is always the case when these series ends, we're going to find out that KD has been dealing with some kind of issue, and that will help explain a little bit to what's going on. Kevin Durant is extremely competitive, and he doesn't want to use whatever's going on as some excuse for the reason why he's playing the way that he is. But to your point, on top of the injury, the real issue to me here is KD looks like a guy who, while still incredible, can't hit that level that we're used to seeing night after night after night. You want to go drop, you know, 50 points on a bunch of bad teams at the end of the regular season? Cool. You want to go to the playoffs and do the same thing and think that you can just impose your will on everybody as you've done for so long? The Celtics have changed the narrative around Kevin that no matter what he's dealing with, he can overcome it. And in the process, they've really embarrassed the Nets in this series.
All right, Nick, after the break, I still need to ask you about your journalistic dynamic with Kyrie Irving, who does not seem to love that you specifically are working this beat.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Nick, the Kyrie Irving question here, and like why he has not been able to punish the Celtics when they go and swarm Kevin Durant. I guess, look, in fairness to him, I do want to note that he and Jaylen Brown of the Celtics, their star, by the way, they are fasting for Ramadan during this series. That is not to be underestimated. It is notable. It is impressive. But Kyrie's role here as the protagonist of the whole Brooklyn-Boston soap opera, it predates everything that happened this season, right? I mean, Kyrie used to play for the Celtics. He said publicly he would re-sign with them, and then he didn't. He wound up stepping on Lucky the Leprechaun, their logo at midcourt, as a Brooklyn Net, which infuriated all of these Celtics players and their fans. He burned sage in their arena, and on and on and on. And you had one of the great exchanges last week with Kyrie, I think in recent post-game presser history. Can you just set the scene for us in game one?
What happened is Kyrie, at some point during that game, is running down the floor flicking off Boston fans.
Yes, game one in Boston.
He's hitting shots from all over after one particular shot. Boom, middle finger. And you go, okay, well, that's interesting. Well, Pablo, as is always the case in the Twitter world that we're in, and you start seeing these videos pop up at the end of the game as we're going to the press conference. And There's several videos of Kyrie kind of crying and putting his eyes to his face,
yeah, as if he were crying
sarcastically. Oh, you guys, oh, ha, 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 everybody's unhappy. But then, and here's the key, they're rarely seen double bird behind his head at the fans that are behind him. So all of this is happening after he's dropped 39 points, after the Nets have lost at the buzzer because of an unbelievable sequence by Boston with Jason Tatum finishing at the basket.
Spinning layup, buzzer beater, one of the great all-time endings ever.
Jaylen Brown kicks it out. Smart fakes. Inside, Tatum spins, and he puts it in.
Pablo, the Garden is going ballistic. Like, everybody, you know, all the energy that they were pouring out at Kyrie and F Kyrie and Kyrie sucks over and over.
As the crowd starting to serenade Kyrie Irving.
It all came pouring out, and the Nets are feeling dejected. So Kyrie goes in the press conference and he says, you know, I was hearing a lot of stuff from the Boston fans. When people are coming at me with that energy, I'm going to go right back at them because I don't think it's right that fans can just say whatever they want.
You know, when people start yelling, put bitch and you and all this stuff. It's but so much you can take as a competitor. And, you know, we're the ones expected to be docile and be humble and take a humble approach. Nah, that's the playoffs.
On top of, I should add, there's another video that came out where a Boston fan has said, Kyrie sucks. And Kyrie said, S my D.
Yep.
Kyrie,
you suck.
And that is also something that you don't, you may see or hear over the course of an NBA game, but it's not on videotape blasted out to the masses right there. So all of that has lined up to Kyrie explaining what he felt crossed the line and during the game. And I say, Kyrie, do you feel like the hostility from the Boston fans brings out the best in your game? And before I could even finish, he's like, it's not hostility, bro.
Kyrie, to that point, do you feel like the hostility that you get still?
Let's not focus on this. Like, ask me questions about the game. Like, it's not about the fans. The fans aren't playing.
From a basketball standpoint,
yeah.
Do you feel like the hostility you get?
There's no hostility, bro. It's basketball.
And for context here, Kyrie and I have had, I want to say, 8 or 9 very interesting back and forths over the course of the year.
You're one of the most famous unvaccinated people in the country. I
mean, that sounds crazy to me.
But that's the reality, though. You are one of the most famous people in the country.
But I'm not the only one.
No, you're not. I'm just
that's what I'm saying. Fame is socially created, bro. I'm not. I hear what you're saying, but I got to go to Grady's question.
This was not like a one-time deal. Usually it was, Kyrie, are you going to get the vaccine? I don't want to get into that. And then he said at one point, this is 2 or 3 months ago, why do you always ask me about my vaccination status, bro? I said, because that's the only thing that anybody cares about.
Don't bring your personal emotions in here. Come on now. Puppeteers.
So we've had quite the contentious back and forth relationship for a few months. Anyway, all that being said, we go back and forth, and finally, I say, Kyrie, from a basketball standpoint, do you think that hostility, it's not hostility, bro.
I'm asking from your perspective, from a basketball perspective, do you feel like the hostility that you get?
It's not hostility, bro.
So I say, you think the energy that you feel from the Boston fans, and before I can even go through it all, he says, it's the dark side, bro. Welcome to the dark side.
Do you feel like the energy you get from fans in this building
embrace it
the best from you?
Embrace it. It's the dark side. Embrace it.
And Pablo, the key, I'd be remiss if I didn't tell you this part of the story because it does still make me laugh. About 30 minutes after this exchange, my mom is watching the replay and she texts me and she just says, it's not hostility, bro. So I felt like that was a really good capper to not only the day, but my experience in my new life as Nets beat writer.
First off, I mean, it's hilarious to me, not only that your mom is watching and keeping up with these pressers, but it's also hilarious that you, like, parachuted into this team. You took over as the beat writer, like, sort of midstream, and here you are, like, being accused of being, I don't know, the one guy willing to ask the hard questions. How dare you, Nick Friedell? The vaccine thing, by the way, I also think at this point, kind of a dead horse, but when Kyrie Irving says, after last night's game...
Oh. Incredible.
Yeah, so fill us in because we're of the same mind here, we're mind melding. Give me the quote from Kyrie, which just, I almost punched my laptop.
I'm going to pull this up because right before I came on, I transcribed out exactly what was said because I figured that this would come up in the course of our conversation.
Yeah.
And for accuracy's sake, because I heard it in the moment last night, Pablo, and I just shook my head, and shocker, that's happened many times as I listen to Kyrie over the last
You've developed
months.
Some calluses in these press conferences, I've noticed. Like, you are kind of, you have rhino skin. You're willing to ask these questions, but it also means that you got to sort of just rewind sometimes and make sure you heard it the way that actually it was said.
No question. So let me go through it just so we have it. He says, this is Kyrie after game three. He says, we're all just trying to gel.
And usually you're gelling around the right time. And that team in the other locker room is gelling at the right time. They've been gelling since Christmas. So for us, we're just in a new experience as a group. And we just got to respect that and just, you know, bring everything we can to this next game and just do one possession at a time. You know, I don't want to be too cliche, but I don't have a lot of answers for how you make up time, you know, from October until now, when, you know, usually teams would be gelling and things would be feeling good. You know, you could put it on me.
You could put it on me. And there was a pause here, Pablo, I got to point out, where the entire press room was like, oh my God.
Is he about, dude, the pregnancy of this pause.
It was unbelievable.
It's like, are we about to witness the birth of self-awareness? Are we actually, is it happening? April 23rd, 2022. Is he about to say it?
So there is this pause after, you could put it on me, and we're going, oh my. And he says, in terms of playing better, controlling the game better, controlling our possessions, being more in a stance, not turning the ball over as much. So you could put it on me. And there was one more pause. We're going, oh, here it is.
Yeah.
And then he goes, of just doing more and holding the guys accountable, same way I'm held accountable.
So you could put it on me more of just, you know, just doing more, you know, and holding the guys accountable, same way I'm held accountable.
And at that point, I'm telling you, I'm sitting in that press room and I'm like, I can't believe that the last 3.5 months of my life have been this. Because everybody is in there going, you wanted to go since October if you had gotten this vaccination shot.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Just like, this is why you do the thing. This is why you do the thing with the thing and the thing that you inject into your arm so you can play some basketball and be a good teammate and gel and beyond the science, beyond the public health crisis. This is the thing. I mean, Nick, it feels like the last 3 months, as you've just described them, it does feel like it's you trying to repeatedly, all of us, honestly, trying to puncture this reality distortion field. Of like, what is this team? Does the regular season matter? Does gelling with your teammates matter? Does continuity matter? Does chemistry matter? Does a bench matter? Does defense matter? Or can you be, you know, can you be a believer in superstar exceptionalism? And it feels like we're getting our answer pretty clearly.
Professor Torrey, the answer here is, individual talent, no matter how great it is, cannot beat team success. And when you have a team that is exceptionally well coached, that trusts one another, and that has that time period to gel and have the continuity, you can overcome even the biggest of stars. And that really, to me, on top of Kevin Durant is human, if that's one in this series, 1A is you have got to build your rhythm as a group throughout the season. And the Nets don't have it, and the Celtics do, and that's what the difference has been.
Yeah, I mean, look, that flowchart, it feels, in retrospect, like chutes and ladders. Like, no, you can't do it that way. You can't skip all of these steps. You can't, you know, just go from, just landed here, haven't played in months, to NBA Finals. And Ime Udoka here, Nick. I mean, it's worth remembering, right? The Celtics, I was having conversations with people around the league in December about, like, who would you trade? Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, right? Like, that's the kind of state that the Celtics were in. They were scuffling. They were not nearly this good. But I remember Ime Udoka, and I laughed at these headlines, remember? Like, him calling out his players, players-only meetings, right? Like, having those hard conversations where you call out your stars, the thing that the Nets clearly have not done at all, have been too afraid to do, that seems to have paid off in ways that, in contrast, it's so impressive.
Those guys have been through the bad parts of an NBA season, and they came through the other side. And Pablo, how often, as we've covered the league, when teams start to struggle, and you've got Marcus Smart in December, I think he's calling out his teammates, saying, yes, these guys don't pass, and the team meetings are happening. How often does it just implode? Does it just go, it's over? Yeah, like this team.
No, the players only meeting, the idea of like the coach yelling at his guys, all of this, these are symptoms of a bad thing that's happening to an NBA franchise in general.
It is never a good sign when those happen. And usually the outcome is this team isn't what we thought it was going to be. It is so rare to see a team have the turning point and then rattle off a whole ton of wins and then change it to a point where you go, not only is this team kind of broken and all these guys need to be traded, this team has a legit chance to go win a title this year.
Absolutely.
That part of this is unbelievable. And I can only stress anecdotally, when you talk to the people that cover that Celtics team and you're listening to them, we're walking back into the press room in game three, and a lot of those people are going, I can't believe this is the same team. I cannot believe that this group has turned it around this much. So all credit to Ime Udoka, Brad Stevens for putting the right pieces together and for choosing Ime as the guy. But to see Boston have a 180 that hard at that point in the year has been really impressive.
It's wildly impressive, Nick. I mean, they've proved they can still be the best defense in the NBA without Robert Williams, without Time Lord, who is their best defensive player, who just returned from injury to play 15 minutes in game three. And they have Derek White, this smart role player they acquired at the trade deadline. Peyton Pritchard comes off of their bench, giving them depth. It's a sort of move at the margin that the Nets haven't really leaned in on because, as you know, I've joked about this with you before, Nick, because the Nets are like this player-led liberal arts college of an NBA team where, you know, does practice matter? You know, does coaching matter? Kyrie said, you know, we're all coaches. I'm a coach. KD's a coach. Steve's a coach.
Do the shots matter?
And yeah, like, yeah, shots. Yeah, literal
what
and figurative.
Are shots?
Yeah, what are shots? Do any of them really matter? Does defense matter? But now, Nick, you look and this team, this experiment, they're down 3-0. And I mean, I'm more obsessed with Ben Simmons than anybody, I think, in the national media. And I just remembered that I need to talk to you about him. That is how crazy this series is.
Welcome to the Nets. Welcome to the Nets, my man.
Yeah. Okay. So look, let's take a break. And after, we need to talk about Ben.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So, Nick, we found out Sunday afternoon, after all of these, like, mini news cycles about whether Ben Simmons is finally going to play in Game 4, it looked like he was going to do exactly that. But then now we learn that he has been ruled out
Greeny, the Nets have ruled out Ben Simmons for game four on Monday. He and the Nets had planned that he would play game four. I'm told that Ben Simmons came to the facility this morning, told the Nets that he was experiencing back soreness again after yesterday's workout.
So what's going on, man? Take me inside of your understanding of this story.
Pablo, let me paint the picture for you at Sunday's practice. Bruce Brown walks into the press conference room and he sits at the table and I say, Bruce, are you expecting Ben Simmons to play on Monday in game four? And he looks at me and he goes, I have no idea. That's above my pay grade. And we're all like, that's interesting, because all signs had pointed to game four. He's going to play. But he hadn't practiced with any of the guys that he was going to play with. Only the guys at the end of the bench who weren't getting much time. Seth Curry walks in the room a few minutes later. Seth, is Ben going to play in game four? And he starts to laugh. He starts to chuckle and he goes, I have no idea, man. We don't know. We don't know what's going on. 20, 30 minutes later, here comes Steve Nash. And I say,
finally, the manager.
Exactly. Nick,
the manager shows up. We've been asking employees and they're like, dude, look at my name tag. This is not my job.
And the manager comes in. It's even funnier thinking about it now. Steve Nash sitting there. And I say, Steve, you've been around him, because he keeps saying there's no update. There's no update. This is what he's been saying for like a week. It went from, he's not really doing anything, to Steve, we heard he's been we heard he's been running, and Nash goes, he's running, but he's not sprinting. I'm like, oh, that's that's weird. Okay.
And so we and say, it does Steve, raise the question of like a run versus a sprint. What does that even mean?
Yeah.
You get real existential, Nick, covering this team. Like, what is any of this actually?
What is it, Mr. Torrey, I've questioned a lot in the last few months covering this team. But so we ask Nash, we say, Steve, is Ben going to play? You've watched him. Do you think he's going to play? And he says, and I quote, I have no idea. which I love, because for a while on ESPN.com, it was Simmons playing game four, Nash, no idea, which is very fitting. Now it just feels like this is done for a while, and all other signs point to the Nets being done. So this storyline can go away at least for a few more months. But as I'm going through all this, I'm remembering what happened 8 days ago. And eight days ago, right as we're about to fly to Boston, Ben Simmons is in the gym at the end of practice. And for the most part, we really haven't seen that. That has not happened that often. And Ben Simmons, or
Bigfoot has been sighted.
Exactly. We're like, oh, wow. Forest. You know, he's taking, like, I don't even want to say shots. Like, he's putting a basket towards the rim and the ball is going up towards the rim. And we're like, okay. I mean, this is progress, I guess. And Pablo, he sees a couple of the reporters. We're standing in the corner and we're all trying to get the B-roll of Ben Simmons on the practice floor. And he looks at me, kind of fidgeting with my camera, and he looks over and he goes, hey, make sure you get this. Okay, I hit record, and he jumps up and he dumps it. And he kind of like walks back and he goes, there you go. And so, of course, I post that on Twitter, and it just, everybody's got a comment, and everybody said, oh, yeah, we'll see what happens. And 8 days later, here we are.
So as the time capsule holds this singular video of what I think counts as a dunk, Nick, that you thankfully have commemorated for posterity here, it does raise the question of, like, the whole Ben Simmons strategy here, was that about the present in the first place? Was it about the future? Like, again, Nets are down 0-3. I guess I really want to ask you at the end here, like, what is this offseason going to be like, given that this is the prelude to it? blood draining out of your face as you imagine what your offseason personally is going to be like in turn is amazing.
All I'm hearing in my head is our conversation from a few months ago where you and I are sitting there and I said, you know, a lot of my friends are saying, hey, you're leaving the Steph show and you're going to the show. Yeah. And the show of this summer for the Nets could be really something because you don't know what's going to happen with Nash. And he is getting more criticism by the hour, seemingly. You're not sure what's going to happen with the rest of the roster because Pablo, again, everybody thought that Kevin's stardom would overpower everything. That's not the case. Does Kyrie pick up the option on his deal? What happens with him long term?
He wants an extension at the worst possible time. Yeah.
Can I just say for the record, if I am Sean Marks or whomever may be in that front office moving forward, there's just no way I would give Kyrie a long-term extension. There's no way. On top of you're never quite sure what's going on off the floor, strictly from a basketball standpoint. What we've seen from Kyrie now that he's back playing day to day, offensively, he is still so brilliant in varying doses. But to expect that night after night after night, given the fact that he's getting older, given the fact that he's never been a particularly great defender, I would not sign that deal at all. This is a team that everybody thought was going to win a title this year. This is a team everybody thought was going to win a title last year.
Yes.
They're not going to do either. And now you almost think, and I don't want to say for certain because I still believe in the power of Kevin Durant, despite what we've seen the last week. But Pablo, you almost think that the window for this team right now might be shut.
Wow.
It's never a dull moment. This has been a hell of a ride because every day you walk in there and you're like, what is going to happen now? What could possibly pop out on this day that we haven't seen lately? And you and I haven't even gotten the fact that Ben Simmons dressed up on game three.
Oh, man.
And the Skeeter Valentine memes were incredible.
Dude.
Unbelievable.
So I love Ben. Ben showed up to game one wearing like lime green lambskin shorts. And that may not crack the medal stand of outfits by the time we're done here.
It's the Skeeter look. I mean, I'm up there. I'm like, I see the memes start popping up. I'm like, where's Pork Chop? Like,
oh my God.
Where's Mr. Dink?
Yeah. Yeah.
What else can happen for the Nets this year? We're going to lose. If Ben Simmons plays, we're going to lose the Ben Simmons fashion show. And I don't think I was ready for that to end either.
Save. Nick Friedell, thank you for bringing your energy to be specific, to ESPN Daily.
Appreciate it, bro.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.